WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The 1975 movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the Python's parody of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, has been theatrically re-released. It's already opened in several cities and will open in more over the next few weeks. On today's archive edition, we're going to hear from several of the founding members of the British comedy group. Here's a scene from The Holy Grail. In the search for the Holy Grail, they uncover a clue carved in a cave wall.
There! Look!
What does it say? What language is that?
Brother Maynard, you're our scholar.
It's Aramaic.
Of course, Joseph of Arimathea.
Of course.
What does it say?
It reads, "Here may be found the last words of Joseph of Arimathea. He who is valiant and pure of spirit may find the Holy Grail in the castle of..."
What?
The castle of...
What is dead?
He must have died while carving it.
Oh, come on.
Well, that's what it says.
Look, if he was dying, he wouldn't bother to carve Arg. He'd just say it.
Well, that's what's carved in the rock.
Perhaps he was dictating.
Oh, shut up.
Well, does it say anything else?
No. Just...
That was Eric Idle translating the Aramaic. Idle wrote many of the comic songs used in Python sketches and movies. When I spoke with him in 1999, he performed some of the songs he wrote during his years with the Pythons. He had just published his comic science fiction novel, The Road to Mars, set in the 24th century. The main character is an android named Carlton, who's writing a thesis on the nature of 20th century comedy, investigating whether there's a comedy gene. As part of his research, he's watching tapes of old TV shows. Here's a reading.
He thinks he almost finds some evidence with one of the guys on a very weird show called Monty Python's Flying Circus. I've seen the tapes, and boy, does it suck. It's strange rather than funny. Five limeys and a yank. No girls, they did drag. Typical Brits. They're never happier than when dressing up as women. What is it with them? It's a stupid show, as I say, and Carlton found it totally puzzling. Heads come off or pop open in demented animations. Sheep drop on people's heads for no reason whatsoever. Vikings sing love songs to pressed meat. Weird men dressed as old ladies squeak in silly voices. There are dead parrots and Spanish Inquisitions. It's all very silly nonsense. They seem dangerously cuckoo to me. Carlton couldn't make head or tail of it. But it seemed from the tape that the audience laughed. As far as he could tell, it was genuine, not canned laughter. In casually cross-checking the genetic backgrounds of the six strange men involved, he turned up an ancestor for one of them in showbiz. Eric Idle's great-grandfather, Henry Bertrand, a Victorian gentleman from the 1890s, had been a circus manager. Was this the genetic missing link? His great-grandfather was a ringmaster in a circus, and Idle was in a flying circus? Surely this was significant. Of course it wasn't. Turned out Idle was screwed up by losing his RAF rear gunner father in a traffic accident in World War II. Irony, eh? Killed coming home from on Christmas leave after surviving the war. This was compounded by being stuck in a semi-orphanage for 12 years with a bunch of fatherless boys. The circus thing was just a coincidence, but you can see the lengths he went to in searching for the comedy gene.
Well, thanks for reading that excerpt of your book, The Road to Mars. And before I get to some of the things about your biography that are referred to in that passage, I want to ask you a little bit about the comedy of Monty Python. I mean, it looks ridiculous to Carlton centuries after the fact. He doesn't understand at all the surrealism and visual and verbal non sequiturs that the Python's comedy was based on. And I'm wondering why you think that so much of the Python comedy was based on surrealism and non sequiturs.
Well, first of all, Carlton doesn't get it because he's an android. He doesn't get much.
That's good point. Thank you.
He has no sense of irony whatsoever. And if you tell him to say, people say, like, get out of here, he leaves the room. And that's part of his problem, really. He can't understand the secondary levels of meaning in language, which is where comedy lurks. And also, it's kind of fun to sort of abuse Python from the future. It's kind of a nice, comfortable position to look back at our own work.
But getting back to the question of why so much of the Python humor was about surrealism and visual and verbal non sequiturs.
I think that we thought it was reality. I think that that's the way we look at things. I mean, it isn't really non sequiturs. The world doesn't make much sense, and we always try and pretend it does. And comedy's job is to point out that it doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't matter that much. And perhaps we reflected that a bit.
I thought we could take a break here and listen to another one of your songs. And this is a song that was done in the Monty Python movie, The Life of Brian. And the song is Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. Set up for us how this song is used at the very end of The Life of Brian. And Brian is somebody whose life parallels the life of Jesus, and he ends up crucified on the cross at the end of the movie. Tell us about the song here.
Well, we had to face a complex problem of how to deal with all our characters. We're heading towards crucifixion, and we had to, there was no way of getting out of it. It was a common form of death for the Romans. It was like public hanging, you know. So we knew they were all going to have to die, and we couldn't face how could we deal with this image of the crucifixion. And we knew we were going to have a lot of people crucified because the Romans are fond of mass crucifixions. And so it's just, I said, well, let's do a song, you know, and it should be a cheery song. And so we thought the idea of people sort of singing a rather bright song as they're being crucified, because they've got a couple of days, was a kind of wonderfully British sort of way of looking at things. And so I went off and I just came back and wrote this little quick little ditty, which has become an anthem in England for the many times we lose at sport.
And, of course, in the movie, your character's getting crucified as well, and you kind of kick off the song, and then all the guys getting crucified join in.
Yes. It's a rousing experience.
Would you sing it for us?
Sure. Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. 'Cause life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sin, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow. And always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath. For life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on that bright side of life.
That's a great song, and I love the way you do it. I love the whistling that little trombone sound that you get at the end there. That's new, isn't it?
Well, I've always been able to do that. It's kind of a boarding school thing. When you're stuck at boarding school for 12 years, one of the things you learn to do are silly and pointless things that help to pass the time. So I can do, you know, I can do horn, French horn, and various things. I've used them on records, too. It's cheaper than musicians.
I think, you know, your most famous Python sketch is the nudge-nudge-wink-wink sketch two men meeting for the first time in a bar. Did you write the sketch?
Yes, I did write the sketch.
Tell us about how you wrote it.
I wrote it for another show. I wrote it for Ronnie Barker, who was one of the two Ronnies. And I sent it in to some Frost show. And they sent it back unused because, of course, if you look at the script, it's incredibly boring. There are no jokes in it. It says, is your wife a goer? Know what I mean, know what I mean. Say no more, say no more. Nudge, nudge, know what I mean. Say no more, nudge, 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 nudge. It just comes straight back. And then I thought, well, that was rather funny. So I read it out at one of the really early Python meetings. Say, is your wife a goer? Eh? Know what I mean. Say no more, say no more. Know what I mean. Nudge, nudge, eh? Wink, wink, eh? Is she a goer? Eh? Does she go? Eh? And, of course, they fell about because it's kind of in the performance. And it's sometimes it's very hard to read comedy scripts. That's why Hollywood is so notoriously bad at reading comedy scripts, because it's often in just as the way you do it. I mean, I once picked up a Cleese sketch, a headmaster sketch, and I thought, there's nothing funny about this. And then I saw him do it, and he just reduced me to tears.
What kind of guy inspired the sketch?
The Nudge Boy is very much an English wide boy. He's, you know, he's down a pub. He's always down a pub, and he's, you know, he's a bit of a Jack the Lad. He rather fancies himself. But, of course, it's rather sad at the end, you know. He says, you know, you've slept with a lady. Yes. What's it like? So he's sort of kind of, he's that irritatingly nudgy person that really people don't behave like if they are well-behaved.
Well, let me play the Python sketch.
Your wife interested in photography, eh? Photographs, eh? He asked him knowingly.
Photography?
Yeah. Snap, snap, grin, grin, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more.
Oh, holiday stamps.
Could be. Could be taken on holiday, could be. Swimming costumes. Nudge, nudge. Candid. Candid photography.
No, I'm afraid we don't have a camera.
Oh. Still. Oh! Eh? Eh? Oh!
Look, are you trying to insinuate something?
No, 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 no. Yes.
Well?
Well, I mean, you're a man of the world, aren't you? I mean, you know, you've been around, you've been there.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, you've done it, with a lady. You've slept with a lady.
Yes.
What's it like?
So after the sketch, Eric Idle, did people come up to you for years and do the whole nudge, nudge, wink, wink thing?
That's still probably the most quoted to me, yes. And people love it so much, I just enjoy doing it. So in my stage show, I'm doing him a bit more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, your father died in World War II.
Yeah.
What were the circumstances of his death? He was killed on the way home?
Well, it's just kind of ironic. You know, he was in the RAF from 1941, and he was a rear gunner in a bomber, in bombers and things, and that's a very dangerous role. And then they were coming home on leave, and they said, well, don't use the railways, they'll be crowded, it's coming towards Christmas time. You guys should hitchhike, because everybody gave the forces rides when they're in uniform. So he got a ride, and he was in the back of a lorry, a truck, and a car swerved and cut in front of them, and they went off the road, and he was crushed, and he sort of died on Christmas Eve. So it was kind of bitterly ironic, you know?
And I don't know how to say this exactly, but it kind of feeds the sense of tragic absurdity.
It certainly gives you a sense of irony. Of course, I was two and a bit, so I didn't really know why Christmases were so miserable and depressing. It really affected my mother. She never actually recovered from it, and she went into a bleak depression. And part of my theory in the book is, and it's not just my theory, people I went into research a bit, is that comedians are formed by maternal abandonment, and that they seek to replace some kind of parental love that they're not getting by being cute and funny and doing anything to entertain and solicit this love and this laughter from strangers.
And so that's your theory about why you became a comedian?
It's probably accounts for why I did. I noticed on the playground with my daughter, who's nine, that when I go in there, I can tell which kids don't have mothers at home because they're being funny.
Eric Idle, recorded in 1999, he's one of the stars of the 1975 movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The film has been theatrically re-released. This is Fresh Air.